This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis.
Hello, hello. This is episode number 70 with Brian Landrigan. Brian is the Fisher Skis North American marketing manager, and he is an awesome dude. I don't know why I'm talking like this. It's so early, and I feel a little weird when I do these things in the morning. And by so early, I mean 10 a.m., and no, that doesn't mean I sleep in normally. It's just I'm like, let me start over. We're on Big E time right now. For those of you that don't know what the Big E is the Eastern States Exposition. So what this means basically is that we're at a carnival selling skis from 9 a.m. to 10, 11 p.m. Every day. Skis, clothing, t-shirts, whatever, all this shit. So we're there, we're doing this thing, and it sucks, but you know, it's fun though, because you get to see a lot of people. Like, for example, you can see a lot of people, you get to do a lot of things. I saw maybe 20, 30 people like walking around the fair at like 2 p.m., super drunk, and like wearing t-shirts where like it only covered parts of their stomach, so that the lower portion of their stomach was just hanging out. And you're just like, why? It's so early in the day for things like this. Like, this can't be, like, this can't be allowed. But this is the Big E, so anything's allowed. Basically, what the Big E is, it's a carnival, kind of. There's like, there are rides, there are things, but it's like a 1 mile by maybe quarter mile, half mile plot of land in West Springfield. And it's like, it's big. Like, it's for all of New England. There's all the state buildings. Like, everybody comes, they show off their stuff. And then there's individual vendors, which is why Colorado Ski Shop, shameless plug, is there. We're there, we're selling stuff, we're just hanging out amongst a million other vendors. We are in between a martini bar and a gigantic hot tub place that just sells a bajillion hot tubs a day. I cannot express to you how weird it is to me that people just go to the Big E and buy hot tubs. Like, why? Who comes to the Big E and it's like, I'm going to pet some cows, I'm going to go on some rides, and then maybe I'm going to go and buy a hot tub. I don't have that kind of money, but apparently 20 some odd people at least a day have that kind of money. So, it's a weird thing. It happens every year. It's 2+ weeks long. It's like 3 weekends, 2 full weeks long. I usually hate it. I do hate it this year, but I hate it a little less because I'm realizing that it's probably a good opportunity to people watch, to have some good content for this. And I think you just got it. Like, it's part of it. It's kind of an inevitable thing. It's like, it's a necessary evil. Move some product. But it is definitely an evil for sure. So for example, yesterday I was like, oh, I don't ski really. I haven't skied in a long time. But I want to try these boots on. Like, I want to try some boots on. I want to maybe get a beginner package like down the line. Like, I'm not ready to buy, but I want to try some stuff on, you know? So it kind of started off as like not a hard goods day, just mostly soft goods stuff. So I was like, okay, you know what? No problem. Like, we'll do this. We'll try it on. We'll see how it goes. So this guy, right, starts by like telling me, oh, his last set, he has rear entry boots, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, okay, no big deal. It's a lot different. These are really easy to get into. It's like a high volume bucket, basically like a performance rental boot, essentially, is what I'm having him try on. So he goes in to try it on, and I'm like, I'm pulling up in the boot. He's like, okay, I got this. Like, just pull down the tongue for me so it's easier. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, I was going to do that anyway. So I do that, right? And he starts turning, and I'm like, why is he turning, like, to get into the ski boot, you know? Like, why is he going? He literally turned, like, maybe 180 degrees is turning completely around. He probably turned 160 degrees, you know, and, like, put his ankle in there all weird. So, like, he's trying to get in there like that. And I'm like, are you sure this is the way you want to get in? Like, this isn't the way that I've ever seen any human being put on a boot before in my entire life. He's like, no, it's all good. So he starts doing it, can't get in, kind of gives up on it, kind of bails on it, and falls backwards, like, over the bench, right? So I'm like, at this point, I'm like, shit. Like, I got to do something. Like, I got to help the guy up, kind of. So I try to help the guy, and he's like, no, I got it. So then he's leaning on the bench that we have to fit boots on, and he's like really putting his weight on it. And he's like, I got it. He tries to push himself up, and the bench slides out, and he kind of smacks himself with the boot. And I'm just like, All right, we're gonna restart this whole interaction, and maybe we won't get concussed getting into a ski boot. And then, of course, like, we, you know, we go the normal way. You put on a ski boot, not backwards, and it goes on in 2 seconds, and it's great, and yada, yada, yada. I don't even know if that's an interesting story. It's hard to gauge, like, when these stories are interesting or not, because I'm the only one sitting here. It makes me laugh. I think it's funny, but I don't know if I'm doing a good enough job portraying what actually happened there. Also hit a little girl in the face yesterday by accident, like a five-year-old. Like, she came up to one of the racks and she shook the boots, right? Like, which is just like a weird thing to do, but, you know, kids are kids. So, like, I, like, go and I try to, like, grab the boot so it doesn't hit her in the head, and I, like, block the boot, right? But I also, like, as I'm getting like, I'm going to block the boot, I, like, catch her with, like, the soft part of my thumb in her forehead, like, just a little bit, like, I just grazed her, and she was just like, ah, my bad. And her parents were just like, no, you know what, like, we saw the whole thing. Why are you shaking things? But, like in reality, like, I almost knocked out a little girl. So that's how my biggie's been so far. A lot of guts, a lot of people trying on ski boots that don't know how to try on ski boots to no fault of their own, I guess, punching little kids. So that's what it's been like so far. I'll try to keep you guys semi-updated as we go along this thing. It's definitely an interesting fair. And I definitely, if you're in New England, I encourage you to make it a trip, because it is fun. I mean, there's a million, but I cannot tell you how many vendors there are. There's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vendors. Like, it's a huge spot, tons of crazy shit you wouldn't see anywhere else. Or you'd only see at these kinds of fairs. And if you're around, say hi, be sure to wave and tell me you listen to the podcast and the whole shebang. I don't know how I got off on this tangent. Ethan's going to kill me. Every time I, like, do a 5+ minute intro, he's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this to me? Like, and I'm just like, well, sorry. I kind of went off on a tangent. Before we get into episode number 70, which is crazy, number 70 with Brian Landrigan, from Fisher Skis. We do have one sponsor for today. It is Sawatch Hemp. Sawatch Hemp is back on board for another year. I'm super psyched to have these guys back on. They're so awesome. The company's been so good to me, and the stuff is really, really good. Like, I mean, the product is amazing. I've got some in my hand right now. Basically, it's all like the one I'm currently trying is the 750 vapor distilled hemp extract tincture. It's got MCT oil in it, coconut oil, organic hemp oil, the whole shebang. Stuff's awesome. Really makes a difference in the way you feel overall. Reduces anxiety. It definitely, like, I mean, you know what's funny about CBD is, like, it's one of those things that people are like, oh yeah, it fixes everything, everything's great with CBD, and you're just like, okay. Like, that doesn't make sense, but it actually does. Like, it kind of takes the edge off a lot of things, and that's really why I like it. It's like, I don't need something to, like, dull my life, you know, but sometimes that, like, little bit of extra anxiety that you feel, like, where you're just like, oh my God, you know, like, you just kind of, like, have that pent up feeling, like, this actually really helps for that. And I know, like, even I was like, I don't really want a CBD sponsor. I don't want to take any CBD. Like, it's weird. Whenever you start seeing shit showing up in gas stations, I feel like that's, like, when stuff starts to die off. But that's not the case with this, because, like, it actually works. I mean, obviously, the gas station stuff is not the same as what these guys are offering. They're fully third-party lab tested. You can find all that information. You can either find it on their website, or you can email them and get more information if you're really looking to dive deep. Buddy mine already did that, and Evan took care of them. So if you would like to get some CBD stuff, whether it's salves, tinctures, the soft gels are awesome. I've been taking those daily for a while now. Any of those that you'd like to grab, just go to sawatch.co. and use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS to save 15% off of your purchase. I would highly recommend you do it, and it's just an awesome company. Like, and one of the things too is, like, they support mountain athletes, like, and that's mountain athletes, mountain podcasts, because definitely not an athlete. So that's one of the reasons that I really like these guys, is, like, they kind of align themselves with companies that you care about in an industry that we all care about. So I think it is important to support a company like that, because there obviously is a million different CBD companies out there right now. So without further ado, here is episode number 70 with Fisher Skis, national North American, whatever, marketing manager, and my friend, Brian Landrigan.
Now we're starting. Hey, what's going on?
Hi, I'm here with Brian Landrigan. Brian, what's up?
Hey, not too much.
What do you do? Who are you? What's the deal? We'll start it like that.
Well, right now I'm the marketing manager at Fisher Skis here in Auburn, New Hampshire, doing marketing for the country, Alpine, Nordic.
What does that mean exactly? For people that don't know, like, I guess people hear marketing manager or marketing this. It's like a title. Yeah, they have no idea what a marketing guy does, for one.
Yeah.
And two, like, what does that mean, marketing manager? Like, what exactly are you managing other than the marketing?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I get to do the cool shit, which is nice. Yep. Anything from printing catalogs, getting catalogs ready, ordering tents that go on snow, managing the athletes, sponsoring podcasts, you know, any kind of like media related stuff, just stuff to get the brand's name and message out there. Usually starts with the marketing guy.
How long have you been with Fisher?
Been with Fisher. It's going to be a year this month in September. So stoked on the first year and really excited for this next year coming up.
How's it been? How was, like, you kind of like, you started in September and that's kind of like the start of the season. So it's kind of like you get thrown into it full on right away.
Oh yeah, it was a crazy start here for sure. Started in September, and then a lot of changes happened the first few months. Got a new CEO now. The former marketing director left the company, so I got thrown in December with no CEO, no marketing director, and it was like, you know, time to do it, time to step up and
yeah,
get some shit going for Fisher.
What does that mean exactly? Like, because, I mean, I imagine a lot more responsibility than falls on you. A lot more responsibility falls on the people that are still here when bigger changes like that are made. So, I mean, what was that like around here, specifically in the building?
You know, whenever changes like that happen, it can be an interesting time. People start to, you know, question the brand and things like that. But that never really happened here. Which was cool. So we still had our Alpine sales manager around, our Nordic sales manager around, same team in customer service, same team in warehousing, all the same sales reps too. So, you know, a lot of stuff that would be like public facing or things that you would notice as like a consumer, that doesn't really happen. It was more of like business type stuff going on in the background. And the cool thing about Fisher too is Fisher Skis US, where I work, is actually a subsidiary of the Austrian company, Fisher Sport. Right. So there's a whole mothership over in Austria with tons of people, and those guys can help out when we're down a few people over here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been a weird thing to me, too, that it's like it's an Austrian brand that's, like, their focus has always been so hard over there. Like it was kind of clear in the skis, I guess, to a certain extent, too. But that's never been a bad thing for New England, because conditions are fairly similar.
Somewhat similar, but if you think about it, they're in the middle of the Alps.
Obviously, it's different. It's more fun. I'm sure the skiing's better than it is in fucking Jiminy Peak or whatever we ski.
The culture's different too, dude. I mean, 80% of Austrians ski.
Really?
It's like a national pastime there. You go over and watch TV, and on four different channels, they're skiing. It's totally different than over here. It's like football, you know? Like American football.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about, though, because like your skiing isn't like that. You're actually, like, when somebody asks you what your winter sport is, like what you do in the winter, and you're like, I go skiing. It's like, you do what now? Yeah, like, right, it's just like, right. And I mean, there's still that kind of image associated in the U.S. with skiing as being basically, I've said this before, but skiing basically being golf, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just for old white people, and that's really it, you know?
Yeah. So it's very ingrained in the culture, and, you know, most people might not realize that most of the large ski brands that you've known growing up and things like that are based over in Europe, and that's where a lot of the development happens and things like that. So, yeah, even though the mothership's over there and the factory's there and stuff, we do get to make a lot of decisions over here for the U.S. too. So that's why, you know, some of these brands that you might not know are
European-based.
Yeah, because we have our own spin on things with, you know, the individual companies over here.
Yeah, and I would imagine the marketing
is different here too. Like what's important to people in the US is different. And the way you reach customers, like, I mean, even just 80% of people skiing, the way you'd reach 80% of the population is way different than how you'd reach 20% of the population, you know? Like, it's just your approach should be different. So
for sure, yeah. It's not as many people, like, looking out for your stuff, and it's more you trying to get in front of people.
Right, and be like, skiing is cool.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think, like, the point I was trying to make with that comment, though, is, you were mentioning you've noticed a lot of changes in Fisher recently, and that's because I think, you know, the brand team over there is so much more interested in what the U.S. market's doing now, and they see it as more of like a, you know, a frontier where they can sell a lot more stuff. So when we were down a few people here in the U.S., I got to work a lot more with the Europeans and really start to work with the team over there. And there's like 10 marketing guys and gals over at Fisher's office in Austria.
Yeah, and you get to work with them.
Yeah.
So how did you get into the ski industry?
From a young age, I always wanted to ski. My parents tell me, like, when I was young and a toddler, I'd walk around, like, Sports Authority and point at the skis. Like,
yeah.
That's clearly what I wanted to do. So then I started ski racing at Neshoba Valley.
Yeah.
Down in Westford, Mass. Yeah. We're actually just moved to work here for Fisher, so.
No
kinda,
shit.
Kind of coming full circle.
Is it close here?
About a half hour.
No shit.
Yeah, so even though I'm in Massachusetts, I'm right near the New Hampshire border, so.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, Neshoba Valley, Westford, Mass. Represent. I'm sure a lot of people listening came out of Neshoba, so.
I've never skied there before, but I know a grip of people from that area, too. Yeah. And it's like, it's always the thing. It's like, yeah, I race Neshoba Valley all the time. Like, it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. So I did, awesome. Like, Buddy Warner ski racing in Neshoba, then went and ski raced at Wachusett. Kind of typical ski industry roots story there. And then high school, my parents told me we were moving to Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah. So that was like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
How am I going to be able to like live skiing there? Because, even as a kid in Massachusetts, all I wanted to do is ski race and do backyard setups in the summer and stuff like that. So moved to Wisconsin. I was very surprised when I joined a ski club out there that it was more competitive than New England.
Really?
Yeah. There's some really good ski racers in the Midwest.
No shit. Yeah. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah. If you think about it, it's like, you know, the Midwest produces all these dope park skiers and urban guys because...
I guess. Why do you think that is? Because they have to hunt for it more? They want it more?
No,
I
mean, dude. Because you roll up, it's a rope tow, a terrain park, and that's the fun, dude.
I
there's
guess
no
that's
trees
it.
To
yeah.
ski. There's no, like... Runs are 30 seconds,
there's
so you're
no
trying to get as many laps as possible. So whether it's a park or a race course.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, a Midwest hill is just the right size for a GS or a slalom course. And it's just the right size for, you know, three jumps and a few sets of rails.
Is that a good market for you guys?
I mean, some of Fisher's biggest territories are actually the Midwest.
No shit.
Yeah. And skiing in general, like, there's a ton of ski shops and ski culture.
Yeah, I always, like, we get calls from shops all the time, like, at my shop all the time. And, like, I'm just like, what do you even do there? You know? Like, most of the time, I'm just like, what even happens there?
Yeah.
You know? So.
But that's funny. But, okay, so.
So, yeah, got involved with the ski club. Then I broke my leg at a ski practice, and this was my freshman year of high school. My family had just moved to Wisconsin, so now I'm the new kid at high school in a wheelchair.
Sick.
So that kind of sucked. And then after that season, I really decided I didn't want to ski race anymore.
Yeah. Why?
I wasn't good.
Yeah. Well.
I'll be honest with you. You know, I was always at the bottom of the pack, and I love skiing, but ski racing just wasn't my jam. I was more into, you know, going out, having
just
fun
skiing,
with my friends. Yeah. And, you know, got into the park scene out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Skied at a hill called Sunburst.
Yeah.
Was on a little website called newschoolers.com.
Yeah.
And met a ton of people through there. So.
Through New Schoolers?
Yeah. Yeah. Sick. Through New Schoolers. Met a ton of people that were interested in park skiing. And this was 2005.
Yeah.
So it was kind of right at the time when freestyle park skiing.
Yeah, that's like
becoming
the perfect time for New Schoolers activities. 2005, 2000, and
12 probably was like,
it's like the pinnacle of things starting to blow up on new schoolers. Yeah,
I mean, it's still a thing now, but it hasn't really changed.
Yeah, and I got to give my time on New Schoolers and the networking that I was able to do through that website, like, that's a big reason why I'm in the ski industry today.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because when I was sitting there with a broken leg in bed, like, I was surfing New Schoolers, and I was looking at next year's graphics, because it just happened to be, like, SIA 05, you know?
Right.
And just getting stoked on the industry in general. And through that, you know, met a crew of kids in Wisconsin, got a video camera, you know, kind of typical route there. We were making edits, started a little crew called Third Ward.
Sick.
Emmett Davis from Vishnu was part of that deal.
No shit. That's funny.
Yeah, one of my good friends back there, Andy Paskoff, Scott Philippak, Chris Reed, Chris Stastny. That was kind of our little crew that we had going on out there. And did the Third Ward thing, put out a bunch of edits, and then we got all together, and my friend was a year older than me, so he started going to college at UW-Milwaukee, and they had a ski club, and they wanted to put together a premiere, and I was like, oh, sweet, I'll go on New Schoolers and reach out to Level One and all those companies and try to do the premiere here. And all the companies were like, that's awesome. We're not doing anything in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So then, being a young dude who was excited and wanted to get into the ski industry, I just took things in my own hand. And we created this event. It was 2008 then, called the Midwest Ski Film Festival.
Yeah.
So we did that. We just rented out like a conference room at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Posted so much shit on New Schoolers about it, and ended up a ton of people coming, man. Like,
really?
The first year was only about 80 kids, but what was super inspiring about that was, like, some kid drove up from St. Louis. Like,
yeah, right,
people
right.
were driving down from Minneapolis.
People were actually hyped on it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like 5-7 hour drives just to come to this film festival because people really wanted to be part of that, like, New Schoolers culture, freestyle culture.
Yeah.
At the precipice of things when it wasn't really big yet, you know?
That's one of the things I think I noticed really early on about New Schoolers is, like, it's not like a cult, but it's as, like, family or it's like a family oriented cult is basically what it is. Like, everybody, like, it's your crew. Like, I mean, like, you know, the people you like on New Schoolers, none of your friends and, like, the ski community are very, like, together. The information they have, the information they get, the products they like, it's just like, oh, I saw it on New Schoolers and that's what, it just has to be right. Like, that has to be the correct information. I remember, like, when Ninth Ward was a thing and everybody was just like, oh, we need Ninth Ward. Like, everybody has to be riding on Ninth Wards. And we were just like, as a shop, we were just like, these are bullshit. Like, these are bullshit skis. They're popping left and right. Like, they're, like, they're snapping in two. However, they always warrantied them and the kids were always hyped on them. Like, and I don't know what it was. I just didn't, I mean, it's just, it's was crazy to see the kind of growth that New Schoolers created in the ski community, in the park community.
For sure.
So.
Yeah. And, 2005, 2008, that whole era was like right at the beginning of social media too.
Right.
And like websites becoming easier to create and things like that. And, I was kind of like nerded out on design and website stuff. So at like 17, 18 years old, I was starting to design websites and just like emailing companies through New Schoolers like, hey, do you need help? I've got these skills. And funny you mentioned Ninth Ward because
that's one of the ones.
In 2007, I actually made Ninth Ward's website.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
17 year old kid in Wisconsin.
Making the website.
For Ninth Ward, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget sometimes that I did that too. And it's funny because now one of my best friends who I forgot to mention as part of the Third Ward crew, Dickie Stiza, bought Ninth Ward.
No shit. Is it like still a company now?
Yeah. He's still running it.
That's awesome. Yeah, good for them.
Making stuff in the U.S., small run.
That's fucking dope. That's how it should have been from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how it really should have been. But then like there was just so many out there. And honestly, like, it's kind of an unfair, like, the park crew is kind of an unfair crew of people to test skis on.
Because
all they do is beat the shit out of everything, like, no matter what it is. Like, you're going to blow up edges. You're going to blow up this and that and the other thing. It was just, it was crazy to see how how attracted kids were to this brand. It's just like, I mean, in all the brands, like in of that time.
Well, people were like obsessed with core brands back then, and core brands are still cool. And you know, Emmett with Vishnu for sure. Like
his shit is as core as it gets, though. Yeah. You know, like they're a true core brand. I mean, we'll stop talking about other brands and promoting everybody else's brands here. I mean,
we're just talking about the industry in general. Yeah. But like, yeah, dude. Like, if you think about it, though, like 2008 to 2019, yeah, things are a lot different culturally.
Totally
right
different.
Now.
Like, totally different.
You used to be able to get away with like the rap and chains, and it's still cool, but it's not like as gangster as it was back in 2008.
It's cleaned up a lot. It's and not even like cleaned up in like a good way, I guess. Yeah. It's just kind of different. Like, there's a lot more like. It's sometimes it's cool to be the preppy kid that does all these fucking tricks and shit. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's a crazy thing to me.
Well, it's different styles, and it's about being disruptive. And I think, like, that's what young kids and, like, the kids on New Schoolers, like, want to be. Like, you grew up racing or you grew up in your small little town and you want to be different. Yeah. You get on a brand like Ninth Ward, like Vishnu, that's, you know, you can express yourself with, and people get stoked on that disruptive thing, kind of.
Yeah. So from there, where'd you go from making websites to
kept growing the Midwest Ski Film Festival, and that helped me a ton. So after things went south with Ninth Ward, as people probably aren't surprised, it did. Yeah. I started, at this point I was 18, so I had a car and I could drive around.
Sick.
So I started trying to be a rep at an early age.
Sick. How'd that go?
I was a rep for Gibberish.
Nice.
And Surface Skis.
Nice. That's, you know, and both of those brands are very different now than they were when you were repping them.
For sure.
So I think that's also something that should be mentioned, because like we also did Surface at that time.
Yeah.
And it was rough.
Yeah.
For sure. But the shit now looks way better. I mean, I don't know.
It was pretty funny going from like, at the time, Ninth Ward and Surface couldn't be any more opposite.
Yeah.
They were kind of like, yeah, this crew did not like, Surface crew didn't like the Ninth Ward crew.
Yeah, right.
And actually, when I was at Ninth Ward, we made a sticker with like the three slashes and the Surface font that said Ninth Ward collaborative underneath it, just to totally snark them. And then like being an 18-year-old, I was like, screw this, I'm going to go work for those guys when things went south with Ninth Ward.
Right.
Surface thing didn't last long, but made a great connection with the guys at Gibberish.
Yeah.
And this was 2009, and Gibberish was the hot shit.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's still like, fucking dope. Like, now it's different dope, but it's dope. Yeah.
This was like Tom Walsh blowing up days, Matt Walker, Mike Hornbeck. So, you know, I was talking to the guy from Gibberish on the phone, and he was like, you know, what type of events and stuff like that could we do in the Midwest? And pitched him on the Midwest Ski Film Festival, and he was like, dude, that sounds dope.
Yeah.
Like, what if we flew out Walsh and Hornbeck and those guys to attend the festival? I was like, dude, that'd be great.
let's of course.
Do it, you know? So he flew him out. We knew we'd have that investment from Gibberish, so we went deep that summer. On the website, we were blogging every day. The blogs posts were just funny, dude. Like, they didn't even make sense. Like, we went and bought watermelon in the hood in Milwaukee one day and blogged about it. But there was this guy in Kansas City who was, like, following our blog.
Yeah.
And he called me up out of the blue one day. He's like, hey, what's up, man? My name's Fritz. I work for Scion. We want to sponsor your festival. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And I was like, like, prank call, very funny, like, who is this?
Yeah.
It's like, no, dude, like, we're following you on Twitter, your event looks awesome. So they threw us a bunch of cash to do it in 2009, so, dude, things were just coming together. We had a cool venue.
Yeah.
And at the time, dude, like, the only ski movie premieres that came to Milwaukee were Warren Miller and TGR.
Right.
That came to the Midwest, dude, like.
Yeah, the whole Midwest.
There was no, like, level one premieres or anything like that. Or if there were, they weren't in Wisconsin and Minnesota, kind of that upper part of the Midwest. So yeah, we got the word out. Having the money from Scion definitely helped us out a ton. The local Red Bull rep sponsored the party too. Like, things were getting together. And one day festival, Milwaukee, we rolled up a couple hours before it was going to start, and there was a block or a line around the block, like tons of kids in like brightly skittled colored gibberish.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It was rad, dude. It was very rad to see that. And the festival went off great. At the time, I was only 18, so I couldn't even go to a bar afterwards, have an after party. Yeah. So we took a bunch of the cash we made at the festival, paid the bouncer from the theater $250 to come bounce a house party at my house.
Are you serious?
Yeah, just 4 blocks up the street from the theater.
That's fucking awesome.
This guy, Kenny. Shout out to Kenny, for sure. So yeah, Blue had a house party. The deal was in Milwaukee, if you didn't want to get your house party busted, you just didn't have to have people hanging around your yard.
Right.
So this guy, Kenny, kept people out of the yard and did it as a...
That seems to be like the real lay of the land in colleges now. It's like, like we know you're going to do it, but like keep it in the house. Right. Like as soon as people start going to the yard, they get kicked out. They're not coming back in. Like it's just...
Yeah.
It turns into a shit show real fast.
Yeah, so Midwest Ski Film Festival was awesome in 2009, and after I did that event and it was so successful, Monday comes around, I'm supposed to go back to class, and man, I could not have been more bummed on college, dude. Like,
no.
I had zero interest in sitting through class, and at the time, I sucked at math and was in, like, algebra, but before you could even get credit for it, just, like, hating my life.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, screw this, I'm driving out to Utah. Like, Emmett had moved out to Utah, Dickie had moved out to Utah, and I knew that I'd have a couch to crash on, so I told my parents I was going to take online classes, and just drove out to Utah, and I never did those online classes.
Even now, you still haven't done them?
No, I never went to college.
No shit.
I went for one semester.
That's fucking awesome. I think that's good for people to hear, though. Like that, you know, and I kind of harp on this a little bit, too, because I still haven't finished my degree, and I intend to, but like I've said this before, it's like I'm going to make my mother happy, and that's really it. Like, but I think it's important for people to hear that, like, you can get a real job doing what you like to do by having experience and just being good at the job.
I think what helped me was, like, from a young age, I knew what I wanted to do. Like, I knew I was into marketing, and I knew I wanted to be in the ski industry. I was just very driven to do it. Like, if you're sitting there as a senior in high school and you have no idea what you want to do with your career or job or whatever, go to college, because that's where you're going to learn how to do that, you know?
Yeah.
I was just lucky enough to, like, know what I wanted to do, and I was driven enough to get out there and try to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't take that as, like, don't go to college. Like, because you should go to college if you're unsure, or even if you're sure, and it, you know, college is the right route for whatever you're doing, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it's totally right for some people, and maybe not the best.
But if you're going to go and just be miserable and waste time and money, then it's not worth doing, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, that, especially the thing, too. My parents were like, yeah, you have to pay for it. And I was like,
I'm not doing that.
Bad investment. I'm not going to pay attention in classes. I'm not investing in
No way.
Yeah. So,
I can't blame you.
Yeah. So did the Utah thing. And speaking of new schoolers, I mean, this was 2009, 2010. Like, everyone from New Schoolers was moving out to Salt Lake City.
Right.
Salt Lake City was in-person New Schoolers.
Right.
Like, parties at the 4x9 house, it was just, like, everyone's calling each other by their New Schoolers names. It was funny, dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So where'd you go? Like, what'd you do in Utah? What happened after that? Like, I mean, what's the...
So in Utah, it was just, you know, obviously wasn't going to college, so I needed to figure out how to make some money and stay involved in skiing.
Yeah.
So through, like, the networking that I had been doing on New Schoolers, reached out to Eric Eiberg.
Yeah.
Guy who produced Idea and does a bunch of work with Tanner, started Inspired. And that was right when they were starting Inspired.
Yeah.
So... 19-year-old kid in Utah, Eric Eiberg, invites me to Tanner Hall's house for dinner to talk about, like, how I can help him out.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, having just moved to Utah, and all of a sudden I'm in freaking Tanner Hall's kitchen.
Like, literally one of the greatest of all time. You're in his kitchen.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying to myself, like, hey, I think I'm on the right track here.
Yeah, you know? Like, what, how does he, like, yeah, I can't even imagine how nerve-wracking that must be to just walk in there and be like, oh, you're, because Tanner Hall's kind of an intimidating guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's not, like, he's not, like, the jolly guy that's just, like, signing babies' heads and shit. Like, I mean, he's definitely, like, fairly, I mean, he seems like a great, I've never met him, so I can't tell you, but he seems like a super nice guy, but like, I'm sure he is, but it's not the vibe.
Definitely intimidating, like meeting your like childhood hero.
That's what I'm
this
saying.
Guy,
like seriously.
Screw childhood hero, at the time hero,
yeah,
you know? Like
real life. Yeah. Like you're like, I idolize you. Let's have a conversation about how I can help you. Like
that's insane.
So I helped them out with a bunch of website stuff. Made TannerHall.com at the time and started the Inspired Media website. And yeah, that was a great learning experience for me, a great networking opportunity as well. Still had the Midwest Ski Film Festival stuff going on in the background too. I skipped by another part of my younger life. So high school, moved to Wisconsin, but family still had a place back in Massachusetts on the Cape. So we'd come back every summer. And the summer after the first Midwest Ski Film Festival, I emailed Burn Helmets.
Yeah.
Because they were up in Kingston, Mass., just like half hour away from where my parents' summer place is.
Right.
And I was like, hey, going to be back for the summer. Stoked on the industry. Can I get an internship?
Yeah.
And Josh Walker, who was the brand manager there at the time, called me up and was like, sure, why the hell not?
Let's try it. What? Dude.
Yeah.
That's one of the craziest things I think about this industry is that there's so many just like, fuck it, we'll just try this, you know? Like, and I think that's what makes it awesome is that people are just willing to take a chance, you know?
So not a lot of people know, and maybe the guys from Burn never even realized, but I was a junior in high school going into senior year when I interned at Burn, and I think they thought I was in college. But it was pretty funny, dude. Like, they emailed me directions to their office, and they're like, the barn at Lakeshore Drive. So I'm driving into Duxbury, where they were at the time, and expecting to find an office building, and driving around this neighborhood in circles. And I was like, there's a barn at that house. Like, maybe I should pull in the driveway and see what's going on here. Knock on the door, and I'm like, hey, is this Burn? And it's Dennis's babysitter with one of his young kids in her hand at the time. And she's like, yeah, Burn's up there above the garage.
Oh, my God.
So Burn literally was above a garage, six desks, six people, really small crew. And that was a really great opportunity for me to be a part of a really young brand that was killing it at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always had the Burn connection.
Yeah.
So going back to Utah now, helping out with Inspired, but also helping out with the tech rep for Burn out there, a guy named Jason Curry.
Right.
So he repped Spy and Burn and a few things. I helped him out working tents and helping out with sales
and
things
stuff like
that. Yeah. So, yeah, after a couple years of living in Utah and realizing I definitely wasn't going to go back to school, I was like, I need to figure out a real job now. You know?
Right.
So reached out to Burn, and they were stoked to have me help out with social media for a little bit, and I was doing that from Utah.
Yeah.
But then it was like, if you want to keep doing this, like, we want you to move back east and come in the office and do this full time. So 2012, packed everything up and went back to the East Coast, moved to my parents' summer house on the Cape, and started working for Burn as their marketing coordinator.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's kind of a crazy swing of events. Like, that's a crazy start. How old are you now?
28.
Jesus fucking Christ, man. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't even know how to process all that, I think. Like, it's pretty insane. Like, and I will apologize. Like, I'm kind of shot. Like, I've been on the road since, like, 5 a.m. or something this morning. But, like, so right now I'm, like, I'm hearing all this information and my brain's just going, like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So
because
I'm stoked
it's
to
crazy.
Tell my story for
Dude, that's crazy. And you told me about the Tanner Hall thing before, and I had heard about it from somebody else, and like, it's just, it's crazy to hear the kind of lineup that you've been involved with. I like, and it's like, there's got to be a certain level of luck in it, I guess, like right place, right time. But it also seems like you're just kind of reaching out, and that's like one of the things I think people don't get about this industry is like, a lot of times you just kind of gotta throw your hat in the ring, right?
Yeah, like, I think the best advice my dad's ever given me is, like, the worst anyone can say is no.
Yeah, it's true. It's totally true.
So if you, like, from a young age aren't afraid of people saying no to you, you're going to be successful, man, because, like, the chances are they're going to say yes. Like, and this was me, like, young teenage kid in Wisconsin behind my computer direct messaging people on New Schoolers just wanting to help, you know?
Right. Huh.
So what'd you do? How'd Burn go? What was the story with
Burn? That was crazy, dude. Like, that was my college education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was working for Dennis.
Working for Josh.
Dude, that dude is crazy. I like that dude a lot.
Yeah.
Like, but he is
crazy. He's a visionary.
He's a visionary, dude. Yeah. He's got so much in his head. I just want to, like, download it and, like, listen to it on drives, you know? Like, it's fucking great. That dude should have a podcast.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Like,
Dennis is great. So this was 2012. I started full time with Burn, and things were really blowing up for Burn. Like, when I was an intern, we were like trying to sell bike helmets. This was 2009, 2008. People were laughing at us, like, dude, you guys will never sell a bike helmet. This brand is a ski snowboard brand. That's it.
Right.
2012, man, that changed so much. Like, Josh had done a really good job getting bike messengers.
Yeah.
Bike messengers, dude. Like, that's what helped blow up Burn. Because bike messengers were, like, the badass action sports people of the bike world.
Yeah.
You know? There's this guy, Josh New Squid, legendary New York City messenger. Yeah. Gave us a ton of feedback on products, started rocking the lids. Got us a ton of credibility. And when people saw us, what the time, like, bike messengers didn't wear helmets in the past, right. Like, they were the badasses that, like...
They were just cruising.
Yeah. Yeah, they were too cool to wear helmets.
Right.
But then Squid, I think he hit his head, like, 75 times, dude. Oh, but, like, he had one really bad car accident where he was like, yeah, I need to start wearing a helmet. And I think that was it, dude. Like, snowball effect, right? Like, people start seeing Squid wear this helmet that looks cool, that looks way less dorky or different than any other bike helmet out there. And just it blew up, dude. Like, Burn became cool in the coolest places in the world. And that's what helped them grow as a bike brand and really blow up that brand.
Yeah.
So I was there, like, right as that was all going on. And... yeah, it was all hands on deck to keep that thing growing, man. Huh. But it was such a fun time, such a fun crew. Yeah. We had the warehouse right downstairs. The office was basically, like, hand-built by everyone who worked there. Like, the design guys had to build out their own suite downstairs just so they could have, like, a quiet area to, like...
No shit.
...do computer stuff. So, like, yeah, it was... a great learning opportunity, like what it takes to be successful. And you know, the biggest thing I learned from Josh is like how powerful your network can be. It's really,
he's really good at that. I've noticed that, like, quick. And I don't really know him well. I've talked to him a handful of times, and like you can tell, like, you know, he can tell that that's like something that he really holds as an important thing in his life.
So he's always been a big mentor of mine. And dude, it's all about keeping your network strong, doing what you're gonna say, and working hard, dude. Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, being it my first real job, like, I didn't realize, like, the work ethic that was going on. Like, I just figured, like, oh, this is how hard everyone's working out there. But, man, we really had our sleeves rolled up. And we were working hard, and we were also having a ton of fun, dude.
Sometimes with small brands, that happens almost more naturally because it's like, you put your head down, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not like somebody you can go up to and complain. It's like, because the guy you're going to complain to is working just as hard, if not harder, than you are, you know? For sure. So you're not going to go to that guy and be like, oh, it's too hard for me. Like, that dude's going to be like, take a hike, dude. Yeah. You know? So,
but man, that's fucking crazy. So, okay. So,
Burn. Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. So then, got a cool opportunity. So I was out in Michigan at the Boyne demo, helping out our Michigan rep for Burn. And with this crazy, like, Valentine's Day storm, I got snowed in and, like, you know, booked a flight, got canceled. 3 days later, booked another flight, it got canceled. So I'm hanging out, and our two reps out in Michigan were young dudes, Tyler Mosley and Jake Jocks. And they were also repping Yakima at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I liked Burn, but it was always looking for what's next. And I was cruising Malachi.com and saw this job at Yakima opened up that looked really cool. It was a field marketing gig driving around the Northeast. And
sick.
Actually, no, originally it was a field marketing gig for Colorado and Utah and out west. And I was like, sick.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to move back out west and really get, like, the goal was to kind of like get back to the mountains at the time. But, so yeah, those guys repped Yakima, so they were able to kind of get me in the top of the queue.
right,
for resumes. And the sales manager from Yakima, this guy Ben Tindall, called me back and he's like, hey, don't think the position in Colorado is going to work out, but you're in luck because the position in the Northeast just opened up. And was still living on the Cape at the time. And
yeah,
it just worked out perfectly, dude. Like, did a really good job in the interview. Well, what's even funnier is that sales manager at Yakima, Ben, that I mentioned, was really good friends with the sales manager at Burn at the time. So another crazy small world scenario. Yeah. I put in my resume at Yakima. I finally get back to the East Coast, and this guy, Rob's like, hey, man, can you, like, pick me up? My car's at the shop. I pick him up. He gets in, and he goes, so Yakima, huh?
Oh,
dude. That's when I realized how friggin' small the world is, and especially
this industry.
Yeah,
yeah, it's crazy.
So it's like, yeah, gave you a great recommendation. Like, I think it'd be an awesome opportunity for you, and like, traveling is a really great way to, like, you know, progress yourself professionally. Yeah. So yeah, got the job at Yakima. Was stoked. They flew me out to Oregon and gave me a Subaru Outback to drive around. And man, 24 years old. Open road ahead of me, car, like, territory from Massachusetts to Michigan down to Washington, D.C., so tons of area to travel. And what was cool about that was they really let me kind of manage my own schedule, and a lot of trust in a 24-year-old kid to get the job done. But,
yeah,
you know, obviously I had experience from
managing
my own website business to film festivals to Burn. So
yeah,
I think it was a great spot for me to take, like, what I was good at and then challenge myself with what I wasn't good at, which at the time was, like, public speaking. You know, it's, like, super nerve-wracking as a young person. But shoot, get in your car and drive around to 40 different random bike shops and have to give a presentation. Yeah. Like, you get over that really fast.
So fast. And they're brutal too. Like, they either don't pay attention to you or they think you're an idiot. Even if you, like, don't know, like, the smallest things. Yeah. Bike shop dudes are tough.
Yeah. I've had people fall asleep during clinics.
No way. Are you
serious? Tell you your product sucks.
No, dude. People are brutal. Like, sometimes, and people just don't have a filter. I don't get it. Like, sometimes I'm just like, I watch some of our employees, like, in clinics, I'm like, cringing, like, watching the body language and just like, fucking just pay attention to the poor guy. He's struggling up there, you know? That's another human that drove hours and is gonna drive hours
back
at night back or go sleep in a shitty hotel room just to, like, tell you about the stuff they sell. Yeah. Like, just pay attention for an hour, you know? Like, and at most.
And speaking from the rep's end, it can ruin your day or make your day, for sure.
Because, like, every rep plays it off like it doesn't bother them, but everybody knows it bothers them. It has to bother them, but they're human beings.
I remember one out in Ohio. I won't say the name of the shop, but, like, dude, driven, like, all the way from Massachusetts to Ohio, have a bad clinic, and then go check into a Hampton Inn. Like, yeah, that's a little depressing, you know?
No, for sure, yeah. I can't even imagine. I mean, I watch it happens sometimes and I'm just like, dude, how can we make this easier on you, you know? Like, you try, but sometimes it's like, sometimes when you're in that rhythm too of giving those presentations and those clinics, you just can't get out of the the, like, role of it, you know? So there's kind of no saving yourself sometimes. So
for sure
I can see that too. So now you're 28 and you've kind of got a big role. Yeah, a pretty substantial ski brand.
Yeah, for sure. This was another kind of, like, make it or break it moment. Like, a bunch of people had left the company, and it was like, all right, man, I think I got the skills. Like, let me step up and try to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And, there was no one else here in marketing, and I kind of just picked things up from where they were going, from where Berkowitz left it before me, and we didn't miss a beat on the marketing side of things, so...
Yeah, and I think that speaks a lot to your ability to kind of keep things rolling, because Berkowitz has been here for a long time.
Yeah,
you know,
15 years, those are huge shoes to fill.
Huge shoes to fill, for sure. So, like, it's not like you're just replacing some bum, you know? Yeah. Like, you're replacing a guy that really knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he told me he was leaving, there was a huge pit in my stomach. I'm man, I've made a terrible mistake, you know?
Yeah, right.
But he told me, like, you know, this is an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just... had an opportunity to step up and get stuff going here, but
that's awesome. So where do you want to see Fisher go from the marketing perspective? Because so from my view, and we've talked about this before, Fisher's always kind of been racy dad brand.
Yeah.
And lately that trend has changed.
Yeah.
Like over the last year, 2 years.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talked about when we decided that we were going to work together was like helping push that envelope a little bit too. Yeah,
for sure.
So why do you want to see that change? How are you going to do more things, I guess, to keep that change rolling?
What's really cool is like when I started working here, I learned a ton about the brand that I just had never known as like a general consumer.
Yeah.
Fisher is still owned by the Fisher family. Like Josef Fisher, senior or the third or whatever, still owns this company.
Yeah.
And the board and everything is still like controlled by that, which is crazy. And like the times we are in the ski industry right now, like we're the biggest independently owned ski brand. Even Elan has now gone over to like a venture capital company or whatever. And
yeah, and Elan doesn't matter anyway.
I didn't even realize they were making high end luxury boats.
Are they really?
I learned that in the press. I think they always have.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know anything about anything. All I know is they sponsor Glenn Blake, and that's the only substantial claim they have.
Yeah, I don't want to knock any other brands because, you know, this is definitely a small world we're in. But
for sure.
Fisher is focused on skiing, dude.
Like, yeah.
In the 80s, they owned probably more than just the 80s, but they owned a company that made aerospace, like jet engines and things like that, and like fabricated stuff for airplanes.
Right.
And when things were getting tight in the ski industry, instead of like going over to the airplane company and, you know, putting things aside on the ski side of things, they sold the airplanes, aerospace side of things. For people that know about airplanes, they're like, dude, you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, what's an airplane again, Brian? Like,
I've been on them.
I've seen one before.
But yeah, they sold off that part of the division to like keep skiing going.
That's awesome.
We make hockey sticks now, too. That kind of came in from we bought a factory in the Ukraine that was producing hockey sticks. So we just, you know, kept that in our wheelhouse. And now we have some Fisher branded hockey sticks as well. But my point there, dude, is like we're super focused on skiing.
Yeah.
Worldwide. Like
it's ski brand.
You can tell the family is passionate about skiing because they've kept it here so long. And yeah, still independently owned, man, which is really cool for a brand this big.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the story that we need to get out there and tell, like...
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Yeah. And it's the other thing, too, is, like, Fisher doesn't just make race skis. They make fucking awesome skis for literally every person on the hill.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that people don't know either. You know, when people... Even when I started, like, telling people, like, okay, like, we're going to work with Fisher this year, like, they were like, what did they make again? They make, like...
Yeah.
Race skis, GS skis. Like, we have one of those, like... jumping skis mounted to the front of the store, you know, in Dover, like those, whatever, however tall they are, fucking like gigantic. Gigantic jumping skis. Yeah, exactly. And they're like 120 underfoot or some shit like that. Like, so we have those. So like, that's kind of what people have in their head.
Yeah.
So, but you guys make skis like the Ranger series that fucking is for everybody. That's what people want to ski. That's the hot line right now, you know, like is that type of ski. So I think it's important for people to know that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah. So that's a big part of my goals for this winter. Like teaming up with Ford Trucks and Free Skier this year, we're going to run an event called Ranger Days.
Yeah.
So we got the Ford Ranger. They'll be wrapped with the Fisher logos. We're going to do 2 East Coast stops and then 2 out in Colorado. So doing a little small this year, but...
Where are you going on the East Coast?
Can't say
it. Can't say it. Yeah. Secret.
Yeah, it's not. Well, still coordinating things.
Yeah. Okay, it's not even a secret. All right, great. Yeah. Cool.
Let's just say Vail buying some resorts in our backyard.
Yeah.
Didn't help me out.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, by the way? I want to like get somebody in the industry's opinion on this, and I know you're probably a little limited on what you can say. Yeah, exactly. But like, what do you think about that? Because I've been asked 100 times now what I think of it, if it's good or bad.
Yeah.
And I think I've answered differently about 60 times. So. Yeah. What do you think?
I personally thought the next press release I was going to see was Peak Resorts was buying J-Peak.
And then, I thought so too.
Yeah.
I thought so too, for sure.
And then all of a sudden, log onto the internet and see that Vail has bought Peak Resorts. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I didn't even think that was possible, you know?
Yeah.
So...
I didn't think that was possible either. That's a lot.
Yeah. And, yeah, my family lives up in Westover. I ski Mount Snow a ton with Jay Knox. Yeah. Shout out
to Jay Knox.
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to hit close to home for me. So we'll see we'll see what changes happen this year, but I hope things stay the same because I love Mount Snow and I love, like, I think Peak had a really good thing going on with the Drifter Pass.
They were starting to pick up, you know? That's what's funny is, like, they were starting to get better.
Yeah.
Like, the skiing was getting better.
Yeah.
The lift situations were getting better.
Yeah.
The culture was going up, I thought, you know? So now I'm like...
I hope it stays the same, too,
yeah. But I'm very much a pessimist with these things, like, and until, like, I see some positive...
Yeah.
Things stay the same. Because even with Stowe, like, you definitely know now that, like, it's a different thing now that it's a Vail resort.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I never knew Stowe that much. So, we'll see what happens at my home mountain.
Yeah, we'll see.
My other home mountain is Crotchet. It's, like, an hour from my house. I drive up there all the time. I love it, dude. Like,
and that's part of the crew now, too.
Yeah.
Part of the Vail crew.
Yeah. Well, now that the secret's out on Crotchet, because everyone will have it on the Epic Pass.
Yeah.
Dude, Crotchet's epic on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's sick.
The lift gets you to the top of the hill in 3 minutes. Like,
dude.
And no one, knock on wood, hopefully still
no one there. Not enough people listen to this that are going to be like, let's go.
Never waited in line or anything, dude. So go hot lap Crotchet on a Saturday morning. That was my favorite thing to do this winter.
That's awesome.
So that's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
But I think so too. Ranger Days is going to be good. That demo is just going to be focused around the Ranger skis.
Yeah.
We're going to have Kyle Smain come out and do the events with us. I'm going to drag him out to the East Coast. And
that's awesome.
Do those events as well.
Force him.
We'll do like a social media takeover the week in between, like hunting snow. And
sick.
The East Coast version will definitely be interesting.
Yeah. Hopefully, if it's wet and wild like that snow report says.
Yeah, hopefully J-Nox is right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about all that.
So that'll be fun. And then what else is going on this winter? We just got the... Gear of the Year award for the RC1, which is a new like all mountain ski that's coming out from Fisher.
Yeah.
Sorry, the RC1 86 GT.
Yeah. The one I'm looking at right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be on the cover of the Ski Magazine Buyer's Guide.
Sick.
And, dude, yeah.
Good for you guys.
Yeah. We're really excited about the momentum.
It skis really well.
Yeah. We were going through the count of awards. We're up to like 60 awards.
That's awesome.
For a gear last year. Damn. Yeah. We're stoked.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So from past years, you know, Fisher's been up and down with that, but we got a ton of momentum rolling into this season.
There's a ton of really good skis too.
Good products and graphics that I think are the most relevant they've ever been for the US.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I get to work alongside our product manager, Mike Hattrip, legendary ski industry guy.
Yep.
So that's what I think's really cool about this opportunity. Like, I'm a young dude who's been floating around kind of the new school freestyle scene in the industry for a few years, and Mike is well established, the man, you know. So
right.
Put us together, we make a pretty damn good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you guys have a good thing going on for sure.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, before we get too deep into this, I got a couple Instagram questions I just want to pull up.
Ooh.
Because there was a couple good ones.
Cool enough for questions, huh?
Cool enough for questions, man. You got a couple. You got actually like six or seven. But
they all from Trill Cox.
One was from Trill Cox, and I can't find it right now. He did ask me a question. I know he did.
Shout out Chris Wilcox.
Shout out Chris Wilcox. I keep saying that one of these days I'm going to be more prepared with these... question things, but it hasn't happened yet. One of the questions is anonymous, so I'm going to ask this one because I remember it. There's a rumor going around that Fisher Skis and Vishnu are going to have a collaboration. How much truth is there to that?
Not too much. Okay. I hooked Emmett up with a pair of boots, and dude, Emmett's a homie for life, so
yeah.
Always going to be down with what he's doing, and yeah. So not yet, but maybe one day.
Maybe one day. So you heard it here first. Fisher's buying Vishnu skis.
We got a factory. We'll make some skis if he's interested.
Sick.
Hit me up, Emmett.
Let's see. Another one that wants to be anonymous.
Wow.
How do you recommend someone get into the ski industry at a young age? It's the whole. I took out some words that didn't make sense, but
yeah. Listen to how I started early on. Yeah, dude, no, don't be afraid to reach out to people on New Schoolers or LinkedIn. Or, dude, it couldn't be any easier nowadays because everyone's got an Instagram profile, or you can direct message almost everybody right now, you know, like very easy. You're going through your DMs right now.
That's true.
It's easy to get in people's ears, man. Like, and just be passionate and do what you're going to say, or do what you say you're going to do. That's what I was trying to say there. Remember, worst people can say is no. Your ideas aren't too dumb, and also it's all about who you know.
I agree. It is all about how you know who you network, know a lot. And network your ass off
with people, like work hard and never like overpromise your name, and underdeliver.
Your name is important. Yeah. You know, like who you are is important. Yeah. So if you do a shitty job and somebody stuck their neck out for you, you're not getting it again. Yeah. You know? So
yeah, no way.
Speaking of Emmett, Emmett's question was, Brandland is my uncle. my mom hates my beard.
Let's go back for a second while we're on the Emmett Davis subject.
Shoot.
The first time I met Emmett Davis was at Tyrol Basin Spring Jam. Shout out Tyrone's Basement. He was wearing skinny jeans and a crocheted jersey. Yep.
Sick. That seems pretty on brand.
Yeah. It seems like it's the same. Yeah. That's the same person. My mom hates my beard, wants to know, what's something a competitor has done to make you go, damn, I wish we thought of that. Anything yet?
Loaded question.
It is a bit of a loaded question.
Damn, wish we'd done that. I really wanted to sign Carl Foss when I started. Yeah. And K2 scooped him up pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So damn, I wish I could have gotten Carl's ear a little sooner.
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
That would have been a good signing for sure.
Yeah.
All right, last question is from Trocox, because it's a good question, even though it's maybe phrased
incorrectly.
Maybe not as beneficial to the public, but best Fisher ski for the little guys, a.k.a. little Declan. So what's the best ski for the kids?
We have a six ski for the kids, the Prodigy.
Yeah.
Little twin tip. Yeah, and then, like, once they get a little bit older, I think that one of the coolest skis we have in the collection is the Ranger FR.
Yeah.
It's a tweener ski, but it's really an adult ski.
Yeah.
Basically, it's...
I love selling kids that ski.
Yeah, it's the 102 FR without metal in it.
Yeah.
And shorter.
Yeah, and it's burly.
Yeah, but you can put an adult binding on that ski, and, yeah, I think that ski is actually a great, like, women's all-mountain ski, too, because it's a little more forgiving than the 102 FR, and...
Yeah.
Lightweight people, women, yeah, they'll love that ski.
Yeah.
So even if you're an adult, check out that ski in a longer length. But for your kids that are starting to get up there and age and stuff like that, check out the FR.
Word.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to wrap this thing up.
Cool.
Thank you for doing this, dude.
Yeah, no worries.
Where can people find you on the internet? And where can people find Fisher's stuff online? I've obviously plugged it in every episode, basically, but for people that don't know.
You can find me at I Am Brandland. Brandland's one of my many nicknames. So Lando, another popular one. Fisher's at Fisher Ski. If you're a Nordic skier, you can find us at Fisher Nordic, fishersports.com. Come check us out at a Ranger Days event this year. Those are going to be really fun.
Yeah, and hopefully once this episode goes out, we'll have some more information on dates and stuff. Yeah, maybe
RangerDays at freeskier.com. That's where you go for that stuff.
Beauty. Yeah. All right. Thanks, dude.
Sweet. Thanks, Adam.
Okay. That was episode number 70 with Brian Landrigan. You can find Fisher on Instagram at FisherSki. You can also find Brian on Instagram at I Am Brandland. And you can find more about the show at www.outofpodcast.com. We're going to be posting some blog stuff, the Gear Talk episode's coming out soon, and there's going to be some awesome, awesome stuff down the line, and I'm really excited to share it with you guys. I'm really excited that the show's doing well right now, and I want to keep growing it. So tell your friends to listen, be sure to share the show, leave us a review, the whole shebang. I really, really appreciate everything you guys do to make this show happen. I never thought it would get to any point, never mind this point, so thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.